Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on X, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we are in the midst of grown-up movie season. The Indiana Film Journalists Association meet next week, so next week's program will have our award winners for our organization. So it's been seeing a lot of films in the last few days, 2, 3, sometimes 4 a day. I know the struggle is real. But I do want to tell you about one that's opening this week. May or may not be at my end of the year show. Not sure yet, because, you know, they're coming fast and furious. And I hope this is a film that doesn't fall between the cracks. But it's the neo-noir-ish-esque psychological thriller called Eileen from William Oldroyd, who gave us Lady Macbeth. And this stars Anne Hathaway and Thomas, oh gosh, I already just blew it, but Thomasin McKenzie, who I remember the first thing I noticed her in, she was great in Leave No Trace. And of course, has appeared in things like The King, Jojo Rabbit, Old, Power of the Dog, Last Night in Soho. But in this one, she plays the title role. She's a woman who works as a secretary in a correctional facility for teenage boys, and meets their new psychologist, played by Anne Hathaway. And this is set in the late 60s and in Massachusetts, and a friendship develops between the two people. Now, I don't want to give away a whole lot after this. Eileen's father was a former sheriff and is kind of stuck at. She lives at home with her father, who's a drunk and not the most pleasant person in the world. So her meeting, the fact that Eileen meets this other fascinating, at times off-kilter woman played by Hathaway, that she may found not only a friend, but maybe a means of escape. And that's about as much as I want to go to as far as the plot. What I will say is the strength of the two performances of McKenzie and Hathaway, that watching those two work together, and especially in McKenzie solo, kept me interested and not thinking too much about how this story is going to go. You think it's going to go one way, and it winds up going in a different way, in a good way, I think. We've not seen a performance from Hathaway like this before, which she gets to cut loose, which is fun to watch. And you think it's going to be a kind of a Todd Haynes melodrama, but it becomes something else. So, with that in mind, if you enjoy a will they or won't they. With the two performances from McKenzie and Hathaway, you definitely want to check out Eileen. I was riveted by it. And this is the other film that, like the holdovers, you could say it's a 70s film and it has a 70s ending, which I really, really liked. So that's a vague review here on Film Sociology, but not the first time I've done it. But I like the film that much. And this is one of the number of films I've watched this week, some I will talk about in the next couple of weeks. This is one that's stuck with me. As a film guy, as a film critic, you know, you go to one, you develop your opinion, and then you move on to the next one. And I'm happy to say this one is kind of just looming over me in a good way. So, yes, look for Eileen. It opens in theaters this week. And it's just going to be you and me this week. We're going to keep it fairly short. But I do want to mention my guys over at Golan Globus Theater. They're doing Logan's Run this week. So, which is a fun look at some 70s sci-fi camp. I always use the Logan's Run analogy with Broad Ripple. Nobody over 30 should be there at night. And now you know there's that. Before we grab a pencil, before we raise a glass, and before we go around the horn, I do want to talk about a couple of gift items, because, you know, all the films mentioned here on Film Sociology, probably available as physical copies, and, you know, they make great gifts. You don't want to hand somebody a streaming code as a gift. It's that fine line between gift card and a streaming code, okay? Just a little point of order. But Kino Lorber has two 4K Blu-rays that just came out. Two very noted films of the 1970s. Both filmed in New York City in its dirty and grungy days. And this week marks the 50th anniversary of the release of Serpico. Al Pacino in all his bearded, big-haired glory as an undercover police officer who winds up dealing with the corruption of the New York City Police Department during his years of service and winds up becoming a whistleblower. And you have to remember, police corruption had been brought up before in films, but not with the grit and realism of Serpico, directed by the great Sidney Lumet. Kind of warts and all, we see Serpico's whole kind of in non-chronological or non-linear order of when he starts with the force, when he starts to see the kickbacks and bribes, and then what he winds up having to try to do to break the system. And this is not this is a subject that will be covered by Lumet later on, and of course another riveting film, Prince of the City. But he's so good. Pacino's so good in this. And, you know, I was thinking about my kid who's 22 and their first encounter with Al Pacino was Angels in America. I know. I tried showing them The Godfather twice. And, of course, they famously fell asleep both times. But this is a really, really good performance from Pacino in his younger days. So and the kind of you are there theatricality of the camera work of Sidney Lumet also really helps. So, and it looks good. This and the other film, which I'll mention, that is getting the 4K release from Kino Lorber. Thank you so much for that. And of course, the screenplay is by Waldo Salt for you fans of the McCarthy hearings. But this was fun to revisit, and I really enjoyed revisiting Serpico. The other film getting a 4K release from Kino Lorber, the original 1974 Death Wish. That's right, friends. Charles Bronson is everyone's favorite liberal architect turned vigilante after his wife and daughter are attacked by noted thugs, including Jeff Goldblum. This is a film that, like Rocky, and to a certain degree The Matrix, of you forget how good the first film is because of the sequels. There's so many of them in declining order. It's not the perfect film. It's still better than the remake. The less we talk about the Eli Roth remake with Bruce Willis, the better, because I believe I named that the worst film of that year. But the curiosity for me is the fact that at one point, Sidney Lumet, who we just mentioned, was set to direct this film, and Jack Lemmon was going to star in it. And then Dino De Laurentiis came on board as one of the producers, if not the main producer, and things quickly changed. I bashed earlier the Eli Roth version. I would love to see Paul Giamatti or Bryan Cranston star in a Death Wish remake. Now, to a certain degree, they did make Death Sentence with Kevin Bacon. Death Sentence, of course, is the novel in which this film is based off of. But then eventually it gets down to Michael Winner and Charles Bronson, who would wind up working together quite often. And that is fine on its own. Actually, it's interesting that these are both Paramount films. Both have Dino De Laurentiis as a producer, and both are one-man armies in their own way, kind of men without countries. With Bronson, He is in this one as Paul Kersey. He is learning about handling. Well, he has handled guns before, but not in this manner. And he does not turn into the full-blooded, pardon the pun, vigilante that he would become in the other films. Serpico, we mentioned earlier with Al Pacino, kind of the same way. He's torn between the department that he works for, as well as internal affairs and trying to expose the corruption. So he's kind of a man without a country. And same thing with Bronson. He's a man without a city, roaming the streets. And, at least in the first Death Wish, there's some conflict where he gets ill. He gets violently ill after an encounter on the streets. So there's some gray area, not gray enough, but it's still a fascinating watch. And, the sequels get sillier and bonker and more grotesque as they go on. But this one in and of itself, while still very controversial, you know, don't watch this as a double feature with Dirty Harry as far as taking the law in your own hands. And there was a number of folks that felt that way and feel that way. So, but it is a fascinating capstone of the 1970s cinema. Again, both produced by Dino De Laurentiis, both shot in New York, both in the early to mid 70s, and both look really, really good in 4K. So, it's worth checking out. Then have pizza and beer and watch 2 and the ridiculous one of Death Wish 3 if you must. But Death Wish still good to revisit, and still one of Bronson's better performances. He would just kind of go on autopilot for most of the 1980s, the canon films. Shout out to the Golden Globus guys. But you forget that his 70s output, you know, some of them were successful, like this, or Hard Times, which I enjoy. But none of them had the same financial success. There are some good films like The Stone Killer, like The Mechanic. And by the end of the 70s, he was making interesting material, but they didn't. There was either one artistic flaw to him or financial, they didn't do well. And I think that led to him getting the least lucrative deals for him over at Canon, the studio with the two Chucks, Bronson and Norris. So anyway, but it was, I didn't say I enjoy it, but I'm glad I got to revisit the original, the one that matters, and I still wish they would have a non-action star starring in Death Wish. But the first Death Wish, available on Kino Lorber 4K Blu-ray, as well as the 1973 great film Serpico. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, let's go around the horn, and then we'll raise a glass, and then, and then we'll grab a pencil. I guess we'll do that in that order. Okay, over at IU Cinema, tonight, Friday, December 8th, 7 p.m., depending on when you're listening to this, the Holiday Slash Fest 2023. Join us for a holiday-themed slasher fest anchored by the original Black Christmas from 1974 and rounded out by the Sundance short Treevenge in 2008 and White Elephant from 2023. The latest from screenwriters and IU alumna Riley Dismore and Bridget Murray. Q&A with Dismore to follow. Sunday, December 9th at 4 p.m. from 2022, Totem. And then Saturday, December 9th, 7 p.m., just announced, Taylor Swift The Eras Tour. Sunday, December 10th at noon, Lord of the Rings. Sunday, December 10th at 3:45, The Two Towers. And Sunday, December 10th at 7:45, The Return of the King. So if you want to see all three Lord of the Rings on Sunday, December 10th, there's your chance. I believe that's the good way to end the semester down there at IU. Over at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin this week, tonight, 2 and 7:30 p.m., December 8th and 9th, and Sunday, December 10th, 2 and 5:30 p.m., It's a Wonderful Life. Thursday, that's a members only one, sorry, December 15th and 16th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Friday and Saturday, Sunday the 17th at 2 and 5:30 p.m., National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Thursday, December 21st, live music on stage from Jerry Navarro presenting the music of A Charlie Brown Christmas. And then Friday and Saturday, December 22nd and 23rd, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Die Hard, happening over at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. Want to raise a glass to a few folks. Now, I know the big news, I guess, in show business is the death of Norman Lear. Best known for all of his great, well, most of the great series from television. But he did have some hands in some films, and he has an Oscar nomination for his screenplay for the 1967 comedy Divorce American Style. He also did the screenplay for Come Blow Your Horn in 1963. Did the screenplay for The Night They Raided Minsky's, which I got to revisit earlier this year. On DVD, did the screenplay for Cold Turkey from 1971 before jumping right into all of the film work. So salute there to John Nichols, best known as the writer of the novel The Milagro Beanfield War, turned into a really good film directed by Robert Redford, who also did the novel The Sterile Cuckoo, which was one of Liza Minnelli's first films. And I believe she got a nomination for that. Uncredited writer on the Costa Gavras drama Missing from 1982 with Jack Lemmon and Sissy Spacek, and that's a favorite of mine. That's a great film about international corruption. And then, as I mentioned, Milagro Beanfield War, he also did the screenplay, and then the novel The Wizard of Loneliness made into a film in 1988. And finally, raising a glass to Denny Lane, best known for his work with the Moody Blues, as well as Paul McCartney's Wings, among other things. But Denny Lane is the one who is on the guitar and vocals on what is now my favorite Moody Blues song, Go Now, which has been covered many, many times. But it's used brilliantly at the end of the Andrew Haw drama, Hay drama, 45 Years. This is the film that got Charlotte Rampling an Academy Award nomination. It's available on Criterion. It's her and Tom Courtney, who should have got a nomination. They play a longtime married couple. They are planning their 40th wedding anniversary, or 45th wedding anniversary, sorry. That's the title. And while they're planning this, there is news from a girl from the husband's past who was found, who was deemed missing after a mountain climb, and they found the body. And because of the body and where he is going mentally and emotionally, you see this marriage, this longtime marriage, start to crumble. And it is capped off by a great final dance moment with Rampling and Courtney, first done to Smoke Gets in Your Eyes by the Platters. There is I don't want to give it away, but there is a move that made me gasp out loud. I mean, horror films and action films didn't make me gasp this loud. And then it goes into the song Go Now by the Moody Blues, which had Denny Lane on the vocals and guitar. So thank you, Denny. As far as cinematic music moments, that's in a very special place for me. So thanks, Denny. And look for 45 Years. It's on Criterion. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. Did I mention Golden Globus is doing Logan's Run? All right, good. We start on X with your Canadian girlfriend, who writes Long Arm of the Law, a Hong Kong action film from 1984 that's a Christmas movie with more firepower than Die Hard, as well as Day of the Locusts and The Barefoot Executive, hopefully in that order. Hallie writes, May-December, Barbarella, in writing for a costume and film class, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, and The Goblet of Fire, and Interstellar, clearly a little all over the place. Very good. And I think that is it for X. We move over to Facebook. We start on Facebook with Sam Watermeyer, who writes, oh, my God, I'm never first on these. I didn't know there was a firstie competition going on, but thank you, Sam. Anyway, Sam writes, Dream Scenario, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oracle, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and The Abyss. Jamie writes, I have kind of a theme going this time of year, LOL. I know you, Doctor. I understand. The Princess Switch 3, Falling for Christmas, Beauty and the Beast, Enchanted Christmas, Fairy Godmothered, Nestered, Long-Eared Christmas Donkey Cereal, I'll Be Home for Christmas, Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July, Frosty the Snowman, Rudolph, The Three Santa Clauses, and Candy Cane Lane. That's all right, Doctor. You do what you do. Doug writes Pride and Prejudice, 1940, A Charlie Brown Christmas, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, and at long last, some new films, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, May December, Naiad, Rustin, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Adam writes Scarface. Eric writes all first-time views this week. Wow. Wanda, which I still need to get to, Eric. I know it's on Criterion. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, May December, and a couple of classic masterpieces, Casque d'Or and Fellini's Nights at Cabaria. Oh, wow. I did not know you had not seen that. Wow. Way to go, Eric. And then some Eric and Doug banter, which is always good. David writes Snatch again, Fargo, Napoleon, Napoleon Dynamite. Cute. JJ writes Copland, Sorcerer, Loose. Actually, he writes Naomi Watts, Tim Roth, and Octavia Spencer, capital A acting. Godzilla Minus One, which he deemed stunning, a true blockbuster with a compelling story. Amanda went to the library, of course. Michael Collins, Elf and Spy. Thank you there. Kevin writes the Loudermilk series. Lou Harry writes, remind me to tell you my William F. Nolan story, the Logan's Run book co-author. Okay. In the meantime, geez, lots of flicks this week. Best of the bunch was Robot Dreams. Also high up there was Monster and All of Us Strangers. Disappointed in May and December and not as high on Maestro as many others are. Dakota writes Clerks, It's a Wonderful Knife, Cannibal Holocaust, and The Wizard of Oz. Robert Muggy, good friend of the show. So bear with me on this. Matt, I haven't checked in for a few weeks because either I've been away or you changed when you were accepting the information. As a result, I have a whole bunch of films to unload on you at once. Frankly, the most fun was seeing Silent Films, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, and The Lost World at the AFI Silver Theater in Washington, D.C., accompanied by live performances from the Anvil Orchestra. But here are the rest. The Holdovers, Barbie, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, A Fire, Past Lives, Pain Hustlers, Flora and Son, May December, The American Symphony, Jean de Florette, Manon of the Spring, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the Rubin version, Safe in Hell, Trouble in Paradise, Designed for Living, Modern Romance, Love Actually, The Sting, The Grifters, High Anxiety, Babyface, The Cheat, The Divorcee, and Daughter of the Dragon, and seven of my own film screenings at the AFI Silver Theater. Okay, so first off, Robert, thank you for hanging in there. By the way, Robert always writes the director's name in the films. I just have omitted them. Just go on my Facebook page and look. But he is correct. There was one week, Robert, Lynn and I were out of town to attend a theater conference, so I asked for the film titles a day early. And everybody listening who contributes, I'm going to be doing this again Christmas week and New Year's week. So you've been given notice. So prepare. But I appreciate Robert loves sharing this, and I always appreciate his deep dive of films, as well as his own films, which I got to get him on the show again. I know I just had him on recently, but it's always fun. And some great dialogue from some of the heavy hitters. That's what we social media use for good. So thank you, Robert, always. Gary writes, Sending of a Ghost, Dark City, Rogue Cell 2, Shadow Warrior, River's Edge, Life Partners, Petey Wheatstraw, Judex, and Stalker. Jessica writes Candy Cane Lane, A Boy Called Christmas, Jingle Jangle, and It's a Wonderful Knife. Rebecca writes Payday, documentary on season one of Dirty Money on Netflix. Terry writes Matchstick Men, Duel, Clock Watchers, Event Horizon, and Demon Lover. Daniel writes The Philadelphia Story, Don't Look Now, Fun with Dick and Jane. I'm going to guess the original one there, Daniel. The Trouble with Angels, Christmas Holiday, Holiday Inn, and Lady in the Fog. Patty writes Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Abdul Kim Shabazz writes Godzilla Minus Zero. Brian writes Pandorum, Renfield, and Grizzly Man. And finally, David writes Across the Universe and all three Equalizer movies. Whew, so long as Denzel keeps making the films of the plays of August Wilson, I'm fine with the Equalizer movies. So there you go. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there now. I believe we will have the Indiana Film Journalists Association's awards to announce next week. A couple other big films of note opening next week as well, and I'll be sharing those with you. So thanks for listening, and hang in there, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!